Hey everybody, welcome to the Spillers After Show podcast, voted Best of Phoenix 2016 by the Phoenix New Times. I'm Robert Hookman Jr., and this episode is Leah Roper reading her short story, Count Backwards from Five, live at Spillers No. 7 on March 14th, 2017. Enjoy.
She's got the right attitude for a writer. She was in a writing group, and they were talking about one of her stories, and she had killed a character off, and somebody gave her the advice, you never kill a character off in a short story. Which is nothing that I've ever heard
before. It's
just
bullshit.
It is total bullshit. And so to prove that person wrong, she wrote the story that you are about to hear. And not only does she kill a character, once she actually, you know, kind of kills... Well, I don't think I'm giving away too much.
Yeah, just stop there.
Okay, that's it. So anyway, she's got the right attitude to be a writer. We're thrilled to present her tonight. So everyone, please welcome Leah Roper.
Like they said, I don't like being told what to do, so this is a story breaking a rule I was told never to break. It's called Count Backwards from Five. I hear the metal panels scraping against one another. The air conditioning starts blowing in the smell of gasoline and burnt rubber, and I taste blood. I can feel Matt in the seat next to me, his life escaping like heat from an open wound. He is leaving. Brooke, it's green. I'm in the driver's seat again. Matt is still beside me, intact and alive. We lurch forward, and he looks at me with a mild curiosity. You okay, babe? Yeah, just lost in thought. I flash a smile at him that I hope still looks genuine. As far as I know, he hasn't figured out the difference between a real smile and what coworkers call my customer service smile. They say it looks more like I'm baring my teeth than smiling. But he hasn't commented on it yet. We're living together now, so maybe he never will. He also hasn't commented on how often I get lost in thought, but that will come soon enough. Three times yesterday, I pictured his death, all blood and horror. I picture the death of everything precious to me constantly, so I sometimes forget how it makes me space out. My ex, the one that left me when I finally told him about my daily thoughts, told me it's a clear sign of psychopathy or sociopathy or something like that. My dad always said it's just my brain being prepared. He used to do it too, which is why he didn't cry at Mom's funeral. Matt is staring at me now, even though I've been driving perfectly normal the rest of the way. I can feel it in the way that he leans towards me slightly when we are walking back to the apartment steps. As we reach the top of the concrete flight, he opens his mouth to say something. He adjusts the weight of the grocery bags and it sets him off balance. I watch his feet scramble for footing and I reach out, but my arms are heavy and I'm unable to lift them in time. He topples backward, the back of his head cracking open on the unwavering edge of a concrete step. The groceries tumble downward, oranges and a roll of hamburger meat scattering away from the blood that is now pooling and making its way down the stairs. Did you hear me? Can you unlock the door? My hands are full. Matt's at the doorstep of our second floor apartment, looking frustrated since I've just been standing here with the keys in my hand. I can feel my hands tremble. I do what I've always done when the images dig in too deep. I mentally count backwards from five. Dad said that someone told him once that imagining death like we do is a form of anxiety, and if we make ourselves calm, we can make it stop happening. I don't think that this is exactly true, since I never feel panicked or anxious when I see these things, but I also think the person that told him that might have been Mom, so I never said anything about it. Besides, even if it's just a placebo effect, counting backwards from five does help. Five, four, three, two, one. You're really quiet today, like more than usual, I mean. Matt tries to sound casual as he's putting away the milk and ground beef. I suppose he's more observant than I thought. Sorry, just thinking. About what, babe? He moves to my side now, subtly trying to pull my attention away from putting things in the pantry. His eyes are like a dog's, round, sweet, and dumb. He's so trusting and believing. Sometimes I wonder if he would stick around if I told him the truth. History proves that's probably not the case. Just wondering how I'm so lucky to have you, I say with a smile that is a little more heartfelt. I move to wrap my arms around him. Touch always seems to ease his worries. Well, next week, it'll have been a year. What do you say we celebrate early? He reaches behind him in our tiny kitchen and grabs a bottle of red wine. I know that's for me. He intends to drink the beer that's in the fridge, probably. Or maybe he makes himself one or two rum and cokes. Sounds good to me. We can order pasta and have it delivered. I pull my phone out from my pocket, but he stops me, his grin warm and genuine. I'll run and get it. You just relax with a glass of wine. He hadn't even taken off his shoes. He's already grabbed the keys and is halfway out the door. I pour the Malbec as instructed and sit cross-legged on the couch. I can feel my lips curl upward, and at this moment, I realize I am truly in love. I knew I cared about him the first time I saw him die. We had been in an elevator together. About a month after we started dating, we were heading up to his break room on the 11th floor since I had brought him lunch. The lights began to flicker and the mechanisms ground painfully against one another. I got the sensation of being weightless as our metal box broke its cable and fell. I remember looking at him as he crashed into the ceiling, sending his body ricocheting against the walls, broken and bent in every wrong direction. I had to count that time, too. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. When I was settled back into a real elevator with a live mat next to me, I kissed him. He calls me a romantic now, since the doors had just opened and it looked like I planned the whole dramatic scene. It was sweet, the way that he looked at me in complete adoration after that kiss. Love is scary, though. It makes me want to tell him because I'm almost convinced he will stay. I told my ex when he brought up skydiving. We'd been engaged for about a month, and he said that to bring us closer, he was going to purchase a skydiving experience for us to share. I said nothing as I grabbed him by the arm and held tight, searching his eyes when he looked turned back to me. I remember how it spilled from me, the secret that my mom feared and my dad told me to keep to myself. It rolled from my tongue, begging to be accepted. He blinked and asked me if I'd ever told anyone before. He asked if I felt sick. He asked if I was joking. He shoved me to the floor. Every day? Really? I tried to explain the emotion behind it. No, that's not love, you fucking psycho. I told him that it didn't change anything, that I was still me. How do I know you aren't gonna kill me in my sleep someday? I told him that I would never, that I wasn't the one that killed him. He laughed. It was dry and sad. Give me back the ring. When I pulled my hands to my chest, he simply left. I think I wanted him to hit me or force the ring from my finger, something that would make me stop caring. I still see him dying in my dreams sometimes. But it's not so close that I can smell the blood, and sometimes I just find him dead without seeing it happen at all. I think I'll be completely over him soon. As I pour another glass of the thick Malbec, my phone buzzes on the counter, lighting up with Matt's picture. I slide the answer icon and put the phone up to my ear, ready to tell him my order. Instead, I hear a ragged breathing. I ask what happened, and through his wet coughs and mumbles, but the only words I can get are mugged and love. I tell him that I'll call an ambulance, but the breathing has stopped. It's just cars zooming by. Babe, I'm home. Matt calls from the entrance, the sound of a paper bag rustling as he shuts the door. He wanders into the kitchen where I'm standing and looks at me with a frown. Are you on the phone? Just checking a voicemail. I pretend to look at the screen and end a call I never started and then walk over. Did you guess my order? I know your order, he laughs, and I feel like I've counted down. Here's your ravioli. Breadsticks are still in the bag. I settled back onto the couch with a second or third glass of wine and listen as he takes down the Sailor Jerry's rum and his tall glass. I've seen this ritual. Rum goes in first, Coke second. It's probably about half and half. I'm only surprised when he brings the bottle and the mixer with him while cradling my Malbec in his elbow. He gestures for me to take it, and I do, but not without a look of confusion. We're celebrating tonight, right? His eyes shine like a kid's, and I just laugh. It's a real laugh, one from my center that I couldn't hold back if I tried. I top off my glass, watching him through half-lidded eyes as he flicks through our movies, eventually deciding on Back to the Future trilogy, even though he's seen them all more times than he can probably remember. He reclines back once he's finished eating and tops off his drink with more sailors. I lay with my legs across his lap, as usual. What's different this time is that the wine has dulled me, and I doze off halfway through the first movie, but I can hear Matt snoring even as I slip into sleep. I wake up in the third movie as the train is speeding towards its demise. I feel Matt kick my legs off, as he often does when it gets too hot while he's asleep. My head is still thick, and I search for the wine bottle, thinking that there's probably one more glassful in it. I sit up, shaking off the last little bits of sleep. Matt kicks again, this time at nothing. We both have to be up early for work tomorrow, and so we'll probably wake him and corral his half-awake, stumbling body into bed soon. I turn and see his body convulsing. His legs are shaking violently against the recliner bottom and his torso is flopping erratically. Vomit is spilling from the corners of his mouth. I wait a moment, standing over him for things to go back to normal. He shakes violently. His eyelids flutter. I count backwards. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. He's still not back. I close my eyes and shake my head. His body has stopped moving, but his head is lolled to the side. I don't know when, but I kicked down the recliner and tried to pull his torso up, shaking him. Matt? Shake. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Matt, baby, it's time to wake up. He is too heavy to pull up and out of the chair. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I hit him with an open palm in the middle of his chest. His head haphazardly rolls forward, spilling out more bile that smells like spiced rum and digested tomatoes. I punch his chest and shoulders and try to roll him forward. The only thoughts I can consciously form are the numbers 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1 on an unsteady rhythm. My heart pounds behind my eyes, and at some point, my throat begins screaming without my consent. I can't look at his face and instead stare at my hands, now covered in his post-mortem puke. An absent part of me thinks about how I'll never be able to drink Sailor Jerry's again. Brooke, what the hell? Matt grabs me by the shoulders and shakes me hard. His sweet eyes are doused in fear and worry. I'm kneeling in front of him, my hands now pulled back from his chest, and as he pulls me away, I can feel the heat on my cheeks from tears. My throat is raw. What is going on? Are you okay? Matt is searching my face as I grab his, pulling him close to me. I thought you were dead. I barely say it. I thought it was real this time. Why did you think that? He rubs his chest where I had hit, feeling the consequences of love. His eyes become sharp, cutting through the confusion. What do you mean, this time? I'm kneeling in front of him, wine drunk and sobbing. My fingers shake as I bring them to my chest and try and push back the fear from my heart. I tell him.
That was Leah Roper reading her short story Count Backwards from 5 at Spillers No. 7 at Valley Bar on March 14th, 2017. For all Spillers After Show podcast episodes, go to spillersaftershow.com. For more information on Spillers, the voice of Phoenix fiction, go to spillers.net.